I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. Apologies, we're a little bit delayed with the live stream recording of this if you watch on YouTube, which we will be doing for every Tour de France stage. By the way, if you want to see the action pretty much 5-10 minutes straight after, well, not the action, after you've seen the action, come watch this action straight after the stage. The RCP YouTube channel is the place to do so. But this is the Dauphiné Stage 6 from Nantua to Crêt-Vallonde, 171Ks. Medium mountain stage with the Col des Arrivées, which is a bit of a longer climb overall. It does go up to 1,500 meters from about 700 meters. It's lumpy all day without too much, you know, categorized climbs. Took a long time for the break to form, but the two climbs of note, as I said, the Col des Arrivées, 7.5K, 6%, before a twisty, beautiful descent down. And then there's a collection of two climbs in Notre Dame de Bellecombe and then the Crêt-Vallonde. The first climb's 3.5K, about 6%, but the first, when it actually starts going up, is 11.5% for 600 meters. And the same for the next climb, the last one. First 600 is 14%, levels off, kicks up a bit again, and the last 600 is basically flat, 2% gradient. So it's easier than yesterday. It's really not one where Vingegaard should dance away from everybody on what are 3-minute efforts, 2.5-minute efforts on the steep paths. But it would be, there's a big fight for the break, Benji, which we didn't see because no live coverage. But
The big fight for the breakaway started with the legendary attack of Grondin. Grondin said to himself, I will go in the breakaway today. And then he failed and then he abandoned the race. So
great move.
I love that. That's dedication. That's
dude,
all
as if
you
want to do the mountain stage this weekend.
You probably just didn't want to do it. Anyway, breakaway did form a large breakaway, including Nos Peteas of Vage d'Isère. We've got Castro freed for Ineos Grenadiers. Ooh la la. Quickstep with Bajoli and Devenin. So that would suggest that Quickstep would not be chasing in the peloton. So that's a very notable part of the breakaway there. Amador in there, Zimmermann, Jorgensen, who crashed a few times 2 days ago. Trentin, Zangler, Kradok. We've got Burgerol, Verschi, and Villermoso, three riders from Total Energy. And they would be the kind of team in the breakaway that would pace when the pace kind of wasn't there. Yeah. When there was no cooperation, Verschi would go to the front. Villermoso would go to the front, and so forth. And then you also have Guglielmi for Arkea. So that's the full breakaway in the peloton. Unimex and DSM pacing. What's your thoughts on the situation?
When I saw it, I texted you, I was like, breakaway day, Benji. 100%. And I didn't even think, like, I was literally like, they're going to get given 8 minutes, right? When I first saw that composition, because everyone correct is represented and no one's even close on GC. It's the perfect break. Took a while to form. Jorgensen said it was a big fight for it. And Zimmermann apparently got in there a bit more efficiently. Frehler, and I assume Frehler would have been given free license, but it's Castro who made it. Good to see someone like him in the break. But yeah, UNOX pacing, I like it. I really do, because it's not like yesterday's stage where it's a 9-minute watts per kilo test. Jonas did do big numbies, unsurprisingly. This finish is different. It's I don't think even peak Jonas can just dance away from everybody here. And Johannessen came third in the sprint yesterday, or second behind Jalas. So they have reason to realistically think they can get a good result here, even if they don't win. I like it from UNOX. The problem is the break is so big.
Yeah.
For one thing. DSM, though, why they were pacing is a complete mystery. Max Poole had an interview afterwards. They said, why were you pacing? Because Max Poole finished last of the GC group, nearly getting dropped. Their Oscar Onley's not in good shape. No Bardet, no puncher, not in the break. And he said, oh, they just said, we don't need to be scared of anybody. We'll just try something. What the fuck is that?
Well, what's the point? I don't see the point at all. Anyway, pretty funny response, to be honest. That being said, maybe there's some crazy theory of like, oh, this is an easier stage on paper, so maybe we can try and attack with 3 kilometers to go from the GC group and gain some time or something like that. But nah, that did not look like realistic in my head looking at this stage beforehand. But yeah, the breakaway, was a thing. We said that. Now, this breakaway would arrive at the second to last climb with a gap that is actually quite controlled. And I didn't expect it to be this controlled. That's because UNOX was the team that was doing most of the work. Because DSM, I feel like when they started pacing, they were suddenly all of a sudden gone. And I feel like some of them were dropping already and some of them were still there, just not pacing anymore. But the gap was like 2 minutes and a half, I think, on the second last climb. It went down and went down and went down to 140 on the second last climb. But there's action happening at the front. And this actually is a scenario that could actually play into the cards of UNOX there for a second. Because if UNOX is putting pressure on the breakaway, then people in the breakaway will realize we can't just sit with this dead weight on our back that is not pacing with us. We need to make a difference. And that's why attacks in that group will happen, because the pressure is coming from behind. And as a consequence, the group ahead becomes smaller and less strong on paper. And then all of a sudden, it kind of looks like the peloton has a chance. But who are the riders that were the strongest on that second last climb from the break?
Yeah, Total were driving it, but not full gas. And then suddenly Bergodo and Castroviejo, sort of in the chaos, just found themselves off the front and both just went, all right, we'll go. And Trentin had just been dropped and he was pacing. Bagioli was chasing full gas with another Total rider in his wheel. He then blew up. And then it was Zimmerman who, I think it's Jorg, is how to say it. Jorg Zimmerman, he waited, then Brit snap reached really effectively. And you're right, it's like, oh, it's only a group of three now, but it was very clear that not every rider, especially the isolated ones, were committing in that breakaway in the first place. And now the three riders on the Col de Zarabie for the last three Ks, they all start putting in. And the gap doesn't change at all for the last three Ks. Maybe even it goes up a bit because you've got three strong riders. Bergodo, who won a stage in Paris-Nice last year. Vermeulen won a stage in the Dauphiné last year from Total. Bergodo, Zimmerman and Castro pulling a bit more full instead of looking at, oh, Quickstep got two, Bagioli's quick. At this point, they're gone. Bagioli got flicked by Zimmerman. He used him as a bridge and then attacked across him. Then he got dropped by Nance Peters. I was kind of surprised, Benji. Dries Evenepoel's already dropped back, that Bagioli just sat in no man's land for the rest of this stage.
Exactly.
Because Alaphilippe was still in the group behind. Like, he can still win the stage.
Yeah, and that's the same scenario we see with Amador from EF, but Amador seems to drop and then drop back to the group. And we see near the top of that climb, we're actually in the descent already, that Amador starts pacing with Carapaz in the wheel, but the gap is at that point 130, 140 even. So it's kind of getting more difficult with 13k to go for that to happen, and with Quickstep having Bagioli in the middle of nowhere and not pacing in the group behind, while Alaphilippe was sitting in the wheel of Carapaz, by the way, so Bagioli could have helped in that group. Evenepoel seemed to have fully dropped from that point. I didn't see him getting back into actually working on Sevilla, but it seemed like Quickstep had the idea on the breakaway and never tried to adapt to getting something from the peloton afterwards. Maybe it is because they didn't see it viable because the riders were done for. Who knows? That's a possibility, but I would have liked to at least see them try. But I agree that was the thing I was looking at. What are the teams going to do of dropped riders in the breakaway once that three-man group formed? But we get towards that descent. We see Jumbo moving to the front and Fraile moving to the front in the peloton. And obviously, Fraile is not pacing because Castro's up front. So he's trying to make sure that they stick to the front in a safe position. Jumbo's trying to do the same in same old fashion. And we're now going towards that final climb, the one that basically has two staircases, one stair of like 3 kilometers, 6% roughly, and then another stair of 3 kilometers, 6% is my guess. So we get on there and Jumbo's the one pacing in the peloton. And at that point, when I saw Jumbo pacing with Benoit at the front, when I saw Valter already dropping, Van Baarle had already dropped, I was like, Benoit is not setting this up for Vingegaard to take the stage.
No, because the gap, the damage was done on the Aravi descent in the last three Ks of that climb. They needed to put another 30 seconds into the breakaway if they wanted any chance from the GC group. The other guys in front both were descending too well, and then they're not just going to lose 2 minutes automatically on that climb. And you're right, like Kenny Elissonde attacked for a bit, pacing too hard. And then he pulled off after he took the gap down 7 seconds, and then Benoit's like, well, yeah, I'm not going to isolate Jonas sooner than I need to. And UAE were the same. I don't think UAE were pacing to set up Adam Yates to win the stage. Grosjean paced for a bit, didn't really move the gap at all. The three in front with the pressure from behind was still working. So they didn't attack each other on that first staircase at all, from what I could see. Bergodeau skipped a couple of turns, I think assessing Castro, and maybe they didn't really know who Zimmerman was too much, frankly, because like he wouldn't have raced. He's done well in Liguria and Apennino. Castro wouldn't know who Zimmerman is.
He's not a known. If he follows the sport, he needs to know who Zimmerman is.
Dude. Come on, I don't think... You think... Really?
Do cyclists care about the sport itself, or only about their own path in it?
No, there would be some who would know it. Is Zimmerman a top 100 rider?
No, but I feel like that Tour de l'Avenir, for example, that he won.
Oh, Carl, Tour de l'Avenir, 2020. Of course, the directors should know. I don't think they would know, really.
Okay.
Tour de l'Avenir 2021 stage.
don't judge, okay?
No, anyway. I love it, but I'm just saying maybe Castroviejo didn't watch the replay or Bergodeau. he would have been there, Bergodeau. It's French race. But yeah, they get to then the last staircase. They're 100% winning this stage. So what games are they going to play? And there wasn't... They're pulling through a little bit. Everyone has a pain face on. And Zimmerman just attacks at the start of the steep ramp pretty hard. And he's the bigger of the three. And he wasn't lying when he bridged across on the RV easily on his own to the two. And then I read it wrong. I thought Castro was bluffing Benji on the climb. But
I noticed
then,
in the chat.
Yeah, I watched it back and then I realized he just couldn't respond to Zimmerman's acceleration. Yeah. Do you think Bergodeau makes a mistake here and he could have snap closed that attack?
Maybe, but at that point, maybe Bergodeau was thinking that Castro was doing an Oscar-worthy performance ahead of him. So these riders don't get into a breaker with each other that often, so they might not be able to realize from the face of the other rider whether they're actually suffering or whether they're faking. And with this specific scenario, Bergodeau was also behind Castro when this was happening, and then it felt like Bergodeau was trying to call the bluff on Castro for a bit, and then Castro tried to push a tiny bit, but didn't really get much closer because Zimmerman was really pushing. And then every time Zimmerman maybe came a bit close to them, he pushed in another acceleration to gain a bit more of a gap. But then Bergodeau counters Castro.
Yeah, near the top. And it wears him an attack works because when the two are working against one, which they were working, but it's on 12%, 13%. It's not that much advantage. And they still have to close a 3-4 second gap to you. Maybe it was 6 seconds at a point, which is something they don't want to do. And that's what happens. Bergodeau eventually does attack across Castroviejo, who was done. And I thought, ooh, he's going to snap close this. Zimmerman's been dangling out front. Bergodeau's pretty punchy. He's going to sail on past him. The problem was it was now 2%. And Zimmerman said he knew Bergodeau was coming back. He let off his effort and he stopped going full, actually, when he saw Bergodeau was bridging across.
Yeah.
He knew the last section was flatter, and so he actually started to recover before even Bergodeau got there. But Bergodeau gets across to him, and I counted 19 seconds later, he opens his sprint with 250 meters to go. So Bergodeau, if he wanted any chance to win the stage, especially as Zimmerman's a bigger rider, and he's won... That was a Tour de l'Avenir. That stage was actually a small group sprint, which he won of six or five riders. Bergodeau needed to wait for longer, wait in the wheel of Zimmerman and recover and maybe go with 150, but he didn't. Zimmerman gets back to his wheel and wins the stage easily. Antomarché's first World Tour win of the year, actually. They opened the season very strong in February and March, had a bit of a dry spell in April, only one win, which was a 2.1 stage win, and then May wasn't too crash hot either, but this is their best results of the year. Zimmerman winning after maybe some decent classics. Oh, no, their classics wasn't that good. Ahead of Bergodeau, Castroviejo third. Let's talk about them before the GC group. Benji Zimmerman, he's on the Tour de France long list, 25 years old. I think I called him for some Giro stages or a Vuelta stage or something like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
His results are pretty solid this year, like in one-day races.
Is he what Jorgensen was before Jorgensen became a GC rider as well? as in that rider that had the punch at the end of races, but mainly went into breakaways. And he might be that rider that goes in breakaways in the Tour de France, gets podiums on stages in the same way that Jorgensen last year did. I kind of feel like that is the role that Zimmermann will play in that race. By the way, did we mention that this man was the German leader for the World Championships in Wollongong? Didn't they pace for him and then he crashed?
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's no good. I didn't remember that. I think he's got a bit of better sprint than Jorgensen, but he will, he obviously won't go for GC. So yeah, and he'll get complete freedom to go for breakaways like Menkes. If he goes to the Tour, he doesn't have a team around him. And his results, this year in some of the smaller one-day races, top 10 in La Guelia and Four in Drome, which is a hard race, and Jaén Paraíso Interior, the new Spanish Strada Bianca, 7th in Eschborn, which is half decent race. And now, he wins this stage. It's a nice result for him. And Bergodeau also, he'll be disappointed, Bergodeau, I think, because they had numbers in the break. It all looked good for them. I think he thought he was going to win, actually. And the way he played it wasn't that bad. I think he just opened his sprint too early. In the GC group, Vingegaard attacked because he said in the interview afterwards that Johannessen had attacked, but we didn't see that on camera, and he just responded to it. He put everyone in a little bit of a gap except O'Connor in the wheel, and then it all came back together, and Ciccone won the sprint for fourth. No bonies. Group of 17 guys. Carlos Rodriguez actually lost 13 seconds. He's injured, or I don't know what's wrong with him. He crashed. He's got bandages on him. Lander and Lenny Martinez lost 14 seconds. And Gaudu lost 25 seconds on that finish. So not a great day for FDJ. Didn't get anyone in the breakaway, which is pointless, because when it really comes down to it, when it's time to help, I think we mentioned this yesterday about defensive satellites.
Exactly.
When it comes down to time to help, don't go in the breakaway. I might need you to help if David drops. When Gaudu drops, Kevin Genietz will not be able to help him from the GC group. It will have been too hard.
Yeah.
Gaudu will be going quicker, even if he's in bad shape. Same with Lenny Martinez. The only way he could help him is if he was in the breakaway, got dropped, waited, and then paced for him after recovering a little bit. Or he could just go for the stage win. Now, I don't know. There's no footage of the start of the stage, so maybe they did try and get in the breakaway, but I don't think so. Riders should get more, teams should get more riders in the breakaway, I think, instead of, keep guys around the GC guy. Well, okay, keep a few around, but
yep.
He doesn't need 7. Anything else from this stage, Benji?
Not really. Nothing else happened, to be fair, in this stage. So no. That was kind of it. Well, after the stage, I switched to ZLM Tour and I was like, ooh, this is going to be a good sprint. Can't wait. Goy versus Welford versus Mark fucking Cavendish. Because he had a three-man train, Gleb Siriza, Kees Bol, Mark Cavendish in the wheel, and 3 seconds later, he had a mechanical. So then it was just a sprint that Maresco won. So that's the end.
Yeah, Maresco, Alpecin beating Coy. Coy needs a real last lead out, I think. I'd like to see Coy. I think if Coy had a big, you can't put... Affini just did the Giro Laporte's winning 2 stages of the Dauphiné, but... I think, Coy is, no disrespect to the guys he's with. Let me have a look. Because, Tosh Vandersande is fine. Let me have a look who is there for Jumbo-Visma. Yeah, Tosh Vandersande and Rosen and Tim van Dijk. They're fine, but they're not Affini. They're not Van Poppel. They're not that. I don't know. What happened to Welsford?
I think bad positioning. I didn't see him at all in the last kilometer. So,
okay.
Going to guess he had either something happened or a bad position because he wasn't in the sprint.
Otherwise, there's a Swiss race, the Grosser Preis, big prize of the Aargau Cantons, and quite a hard, hilly one-day race around Lagern with the Rotberg climb, which is also done in 2 staircases. Anyway, that was one. I didn't watch it. It wasn't on GCN+. Thibaut Nace won ahead of Mark Hirschi and Bilbao and Marco Haller in a small group sprint. That kid packed some serious punch. His sprint is really good. He won an uphill sprint in Tour of Norway. He was second in the uphill finish at Hungary. At Romandy, he was second on the first stage behind Ethan Vernon and ahead of Menton, who are actual, considered sprinters. So he's very, very punchy. And yeah, should he be in Belgium's World Championships team? Anyway, so nice results still. I know he or she's not maybe what he was in 2020, but he's still in decent shape and Haller's fast too. So yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like I did not expect from that list Haller to be in that list.
Neither.
Yes, Nays overperforms, but Haller to be in that list, I'm like, ooh la la, that's a good performance. Because yeah, the climbs in that race are 7 kilometers, 3.7%. When you look at that, it's kind of understandable, but the riders that are with him in that group are punchier riders. As simple as that.
Yeah.
That being said, we have not discussed tomorrow's stage. Tomorrow's stage of the Critérium du Dauphiné is a mountain stage, right? For the Savoie Quad Affair?
It's a real mountain stage, a hard one. Actually, 150 Ks, two HC climbs, one Category 1 climb. Kind of a better finish for Vingegaard than he might see from any of the high mountain stages in the Tour de France, apart from Col de la Loza, because it's actually a genuine finish. And yeah, it starts from 260 meters and goes up to 2,600, so a lot of elevation gain. The Col de la Madeleine's the first, going up to 2,000 meters, 25 Ks at 6%, and there's some steep Ks in the last 3 Ks, for the last little bit, is averages 8.5%. That's nearly 2,000. That's quite difficult. Descent. Then from La Chambre in the valley for a little bit, 10-15 Ks, then they do two climbs. The Col de la Confrérie, which is 12 Ks, 6.5%. And then there's another little punch up to the Col du Molard, which, I mean, that's a soft HC climb if I've ever seen one. It's only 18 Ks, 5.7%. Then a short descent, not much recovery, false flat uphill. And then the last ramp of the Col de la Croix de Fer is really hard, actually. It's like 7 kilometers, 6.5 kilometers at 8.5%, 8%. So up to 2,000, over 2,000 meters. So, there might not be big gaps, because I don't really see, when I see this stage, who on Jumbo Visma can pace that hard? You know what I mean? Like, and then other teams, if you're the director of another team, are you gonna light this stage up, chase the break? For your finger guard to absolutely torch you?
Jeff might, looking at yesterday. But that being said, on paper, Jumbo Visma wins the stage with Vingegaard if the stage goes to the peloton. If I'm any other team, I would start thinking about breakaway.
Yeah.
Because Jumbo is the team that has such a favoritism on the stage that they should be doing all the controlling here. Because they're also in the yellow jersey. They have the favorite of the stage. No other team should help them in the peloton. Just go in the breakaway.
I mean, you got like Chris Harper, right? Mm-hmm. He's on 3:28. He's not going to get a good GC result here. Why isn't he on 10 minutes? Because then Jumbo will chase you harder. Otherwise, James Shaw, did he do a good TT? The problem is the flat start as well. The flat start really doesn't suggest. Like, if Jorgensen had just had a really bad mechanical and was on 17 minutes, he'd be great for this, but he doesn't look in good shape after those two crashes. So, yeah, it looks like, oh, well, everyone should get in the break, but who will get in the break?
Yeah.
Probably rouleurs, because even the good climbers who are out of GC aren't far enough out of GC, like I mentioned. Like, Juanpe's on 5 minutes. I mean, he should try. But then they'll want him to be around Ciccone, so he won't get in the break.
And also, it's only 150 kilometers through control.
Yeah, short.
So Jumbo can set someone at the front of the peloton on the Col de Madeleine, and then in the descent, they can stay at the front without losing too much energy. They'll probably have a bit more of a gap after that descent, because the break will probably take some time in that descent, I would say. But then we go through the valley to the next climb, and they might put another rider at the front anyway. So I think Jonas wins this stage.
Yeah, he should. It really suits him. And there's a, 6.5 Ks, 8%. I don't know how long that is. 20 minutes, 22 minutes maybe, given the altitude. Full gas. It's not that long. The problem is he has no mountain support because Kreuzfeld crashed out. So you're right. If I'm Jumbo, well, you've got six rouleurs. Use them to control the break, and Jonas can do the rest once you got him safely over the Col de Molard. That's their finish line.
Yeah.
And then, someone will probably pace the false flat uphill section anyway.
Now, the other factor as well is, the second day he attacks, everybody else, except maybe UAE, will be looking at each other. Do you feel like Yates might still believe that he can one-up Vingegaard. That's the only climber in the peloton that might still have the courage to 1v1 Vingegaard here.
I think O'Connor is hopeful he can stay on Vingegaard's wheel for a period of time. I don't think he's stupid enough to just attack him at the base of the last climb. I think, yeah. You know, that's not a Carapaz proved that's not a very good idea, and his team's not so good for setting up anything. You're right, UAE, they have Micah, they have Bjerg who can pace shallow gradients. He actually kept the young riders jersey by 2 seconds today, riding full gas the line. Groschartner, Trentin's fine on this gradient, and Yates. Yates is really the only guy who I can see possibly on these longer climbs, which we haven't had yet, hanging with Vingegaard and maybe even trying to attack him. Yates is the only one. So how far is he on GC, Yates?
He's not decades behind, but the time trial wasn't amazing
126.
Either. He blew in the end of the time trial, if I recall correctly. So yeah, 126, that means that...
Tomorrow wouldn't be the day I try.
And also, the factor is also that at that point, if you're 126 behind, you're fighting for the podium, eh?
Well, I think the Sunday stage is a little bit more interesting. It's a lot more complicated for Jumbo-Visma to control, because you look at the Col du Granier there, 50, you can basically have Jonas completely on his own 55 kilometers from the finish, about a third of the way up Col du Granier. And then you can, I don't know where Micah is on GC. He's not decades behind either. He's on 306. Then you can actually try something a little bit different on that stage tomorrow. I don't see it. But yeah, hopefully it's a good stage and we maybe get a crazy watts per kilo performance from Jonas Vingegaard.
Yep.
Maybe he just rides it in. But yeah, he'll be the prohibitive favorite to win it. That's all, I think, Benji.
Yep, that's all.
My legs hurt so much. I like did downhill running 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm trying to practice because, you know, if you don't practice, you have to practice it. And yeah, it's like 3Ks, 25% downhill. And I did it fine. And then 2 days later, I'm working out my legs. They're on fire. I need one of those, you know, those self-massage guns. I'm not sure if they actually work or not. I mean, they can get a free plug if they... But yeah, my legs are absolutely fried. Anyway, maybe they'll recover in time for me to challenge Jonas tomorrow. He's hoping. See you with a recap of that tomorrow. Ciao.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.